Happy Sunday, fun day, folks. Travanti had a meal. Let's just go from there. Why do I sound so weird? It's bizarre sound. Sorry. First pod in a while. And I know that not everybody's too into the solo pods, but you know, I've been kind of thinking about the entire project known as the Go From There podcast. And, you know, definitely lost momentum, maybe even lost a little interest in the entire thing, period. Partly because, you know, life is life, and I decided to go on and live it, you know, to a certain extent anyway. Not completely, but we're working on it. I have some really cool podcasts coming up this coming Monday. I think two, if not three, interviews that are very legit, very cool guests. Tomorrow I meet with Christian and Ryan, the co-founders of 10th Mountain Whiskey, which is a local spirit that's made here in Vail, and contacted them, and they were gracious enough to want to sit down and chat with me in the tasting room tomorrow. So that's one. That's the only one I'm going to tell right now. It doesn't matter anyway. You'll see the rest when they go up. The reason I'm going solo with a couple beers here tonight is one of the first things that I thought about telling on the podcast was my arrest in connection with a Mexican drug cartel that went down in 2008. This is kind of a weird story to tell because it's a big part of my life. I let it govern me for a long time as far as, like, you know, how I treated friends and social life in general for a little while. And I feel like it's been long enough now where I can tell it. It's a really long story. Like, when I start getting into it, I get a little worked up. I think I'm going to do this in three parts because it's pretty long. I mean, we're talking 10 months worth of, you know, time wasted and being involved in something that, first of all, I'll say I did not do. I talked about this. If you're, like, way old fan of the podcast, this came up in the first few shows a lot. I think mainly because I wanted to get it out there, but I'm going to be really vague about some of the names, some of the, like, obviously the officials, the agencies, all that kind of stuff, but I'll try to give you the gist because I think it's a pretty decent story. So let's get into it. Let me start off by saying this. 2008 was not stellar for me in terms of, anything really. I started out in, I think, January of that year with an amazing, ridiculous second DUI. I basically had been at a restaurant having dinner, you know, being gentlemanly, but had a couple drinks and decided to just drive home. It's a pretty straight shot from where I was at to my house, but I had expired tags and, you know, leaving the downtown area about 10 o'clock, 10:30, cops are definitely looking for reasons to pull people over and mess around with them a little bit. So the beginning of the year starts out second DUI. This is in the middle of, like, in Colorado law where, the consequences, like, every year the consequences ramp up as far as DUIs, as they should, okay? Can't buzz drive, can't drunk drive, and now especially if you do one, man, the penalties are pretty wild. I mean, mandatory jail time, like, all kinds of stuff. This was a little before it started to get really bad. I knew that this being the second DUI, my consequences were going to be pretty brutal. Decided to hire a lawyer for this one. A very high-profile DUI lawyer. Now, let me say this, too. I don't think it matters what state you're in or whatever, but if you ever get a DUI, if it's your first one, don't get a lawyer. Just go, you know, go to the hearing, see what they offer you. It's probably going to be, you know, as close to a slap on the wrist as you could make it. Don't spend $5,000 because they're going to squeeze you for every freaking dime as far as classes and probably at this point the breathalyzer fees. Like, I mean, it's really expensive. If it's your first one, just save your money, you know. Second one, I don't know anymore. Second one is mandatory jail time. If you got the money to throw at it, maybe. But tell you what, if the cop does his job right, it doesn't matter if you have a lawyer. And even if he does do the job right and you have a lawyer, it's almost like an offensive move in the eyes of the court. So like when you come in and you have somebody representing you, I feel like you get a little less of a fair shake. I mean, they're not happy to see you anyway, but when they're like, you know, when you're trying to basically get out of it or whatever, it makes it a little harder. So just a little DUI tidbit. So I'm in the middle of this. I know I'm going to be losing a lot of money, selling my car, doing all kinds of stuff. One April morning, well, let's start in April afternoon before the April morning. There was kind of a weird brush fire that happened in a town about 12 miles away from where I was at. And my father works for the gas company. So, you know, immediately when, you know, there's a line in danger of maybe being involved in a fire, you know, they have to go out there, shut things off, make sure everything's okay. And my dad, he's a badass. Like, he doesn't just go out and, you know, shut off the gas. My dad, where he got dispatched to, it was a farm. And, you know, he's out there after he, you know, takes care of business and all that kind of stuff, helping the guy try to build a line. Not burning it. I think it was just like a, you know, trying to wet things down and, you know, try to stop it a little bit. Whatever you can do. I mean, brush fires in Colorado with the wind in the summertime, especially, but this was April. Unpredictable, scary, dangerous. And I knew that my dad was out there helping, was contained relatively early in the evening, and you know, that was that. But that little tidbit was kind of rattling around in my head. Oh, babe, can't talk to you right now. Anyway, the next morning, it was a day off for me. I wish forever I had the date memorized and all that kind of stuff, just because I was so involved in it, and so, you know, drowning in it for a long time. But anyway, it was a day off, and got up, you know, pretty, you know, normal day off, you know, wake up at like 10, a little late, you know, just kind of getting situated. I had put on pants, a white t-shirt, shoes, and I sort of did my hair. And at that time I had the mob boss hair kind of going on. And, so I had it slicked back a little, you know, whatever. That's not super important unless you're talking about my mugshot, but, the morning started off pretty normal, and then I get a phone call from a gal that I worked with, and I'm like, hey, what's up? She says, there's like 6 police officers here. They're looking for you, and one of them has a manila envelope with a picture of someone on the envelope. And of course, like, I mean, how many things race through your head? That's kind of a, you know, a bit of a gaslight statement, you know? I start running through everything, and for some reason, the wheels in my head were spinning and then just stopped on the idea that, like, who's on the picture? So I ask, you know, who's the picture of? She's like, I haven't seen it. I don't know who the picture's of. And for whatever reason, I thought that, like, in that moment, I'm like, oh, shit, I haven't talked to Dad since last night yesterday when he was involved in this brush fire. You know, maybe something happened that somehow I didn't hear from somebody else about it. Like, I don't know why that stopped, as far as, like, you know, the thing that was going on in my head. Mostly because it certainly wasn't what was actually going on. I told the gal at work, I go, well, are they still milling around? What are they doing? And they're like, yeah, we told them you're not here, but they're, like, looking around. And I go, well, put one of them on the phone. And so she's like, okay. So she, you know, little silence, and then a man gets on the phone. And he asks, are you Travanti Jaramillo or whatever he thought, you know? And I go, yeah, yeah, what's happening? What's going on? At this point, I'm getting a little frantic, thinking something's happened. And I'm just like, what's going on? Oh, no, nothing. We just need to talk to you. for a few minutes. So that was even worse. I'm like, what do you mean? You got what's up? And he goes, well, where are you now? I go, well, I'm home. Well, where's home? So I give him my address. You know, this is a weird point that always bugged me. It's like, if they're coming to actually, you know, put me in handcuffs and take me to jail, how do you not know where I live? It's all out there. I mean, it's a tiny town. Like, come on. How do you not know where I live? Where are you now? I'm at home. Well, what's the address? So I give the address and I go outside and I basically stand in the driveway waiting to, you know, be met by this officer or whatever. About 5 or 10 minutes go by and 3 cruisers come racing up my dirt driveway. So it's this big, big cloud of dirt and all that kind of stuff. Sirens, not sirens, just the lights, you know, going crazy. And I'm standing there. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And so I'm standing there and there are 4 uniformed officers and 2, you know, relatively plain clothes, maybe detective type of clothing, polo shirt and all that kind of stuff. And a guy starts approaching me. And before saying anything or telling me what's going on, he basically just comes up to me with the right hand on my left shoulder to spin me around to cuff me, says, you're under arrest. And I'm like, what the f-? Like, I'm still going like, what is something wrong with dad? Like, what is going on here? I have no idea why these guys are here, what's going on. So they kind of, you know, bring me up to the hood of the cruiser and they say, we need permission to search your apartment and your vehicle. And again, at this point, nothing is clicking. I'm like, what do you mean? What do I have to do? So they have a search warrant that I had to sign so they could go search my apartment and search my car. Well, again, still not knowing what's going on with my hands in cuffs, I sign the warrant. A couple officers go ahead, and I finally get put back in the cruiser. And I'm in the back of the cruiser, and I'm like, what is going on? What the fuck? Like, you need to tell me why am I under arrest? What's going on? And the officer that was just helping serve the warrants and all that kind of stuff, finally he tells me, he goes, you don't know what's happening. I go, why would I ask you if I knew? And he said, we are serving a task force warrant. That's what I'm going to say. Task force warrant. And I'm like, for what? And he goes, it's in connection with a drug case. You are one of the people that they're seeking, and you're under arrest. And at this point, I haven't seen anything, no affidavit, no. The only thing I've seen is a search warrant. I signed happily because there's nothing in my house, you know? So I'm basically sitting in the back of the cruiser thinking, what the fuck is happening? The jail's about 5 minutes or so from where I live. So, you know, that whole ride, I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? And like, the only thing I thought to grab was my cell phone and some cash. And that's all basically all I had on me when we got to the jail. They go in. They kind of bring in this little area, the processing area. They take away my shoes. They take away my belt. They take away, like, what I was wearing, obviously, except for underwear. And give me fucking stripes. I can't tell you how bizarre that whole thought process is and that whole scenario is when you have zero idea what's going on. Again, you know, this is also before, I think now most states, the cell phone is considered an extension of your wallet, sort of. So, like, if you were arrested, they can, you know, search your wallet, find your ID, you know, find any, like, if you have drugs or whatever. Back then, they just got the cell phone, shut it off, and put it in a plastic bag along with my clothes, the belt, and the shoes, and all that kind of stuff. So, they bring me into the central booking area, which is, I don't know. I've never been in another jail before, so I don't know if other jails have this kind of thing. But it's basically like a, you know, like a round bank of countertop, a couple computers, a couple people working there, and what we lovingly refer to as the fishbowl fish tank. Two large holding cells that, you know, probably could fit 20. I mean, if something crazy happened, maybe 30, 40 people crammed in there. And this is before you go to a jail cell or whatever. This is just like while they're trying to sort things out. I'm escorted out of the changing room or whatever you want to call it, out to the booking area. And I come around the corner and both of these holding cells have a few gentlemen inside them. And what was weird was that right off the bat, and again, you know, no names, no, I mean, if maybe someday I'll throw all the names out and maybe grab these guys and talk to them again or whatever. But there were a couple faces that I recognized and recognized me. And the look that I got from them was definitely like that cocked head, puppy dog look, like, what the fuck are you doing here type of stuff. But, you know, sure enough, they put me in one of the cells, and we start talking. You know, there's guys that I have never seen before. The two gentlemen that I did know were in the other room, the other tank, let's say. So, you know, I wasn't able to talk with them or whatever. But I basically, you know, I go in there. There's one toilet. There's one sink. It's all one deal. There's a bunch of mats to sleep on, and there's a bunch of blankets, and there's a bench and a TV and a phone. And I walk in, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? There was a gentleman in there, kind of young, and I asked him, like, I'm like, what are you doing here? What happened? And he relayed a story about a traffic stop. He had some, what he told me, he had drugs on him, or his friend had drugs on him, whatever. That's why he was in there. He goes, but I don't know. I've been here since, I don't know, you know, 1 o'clock this morning, and all morning they've been bringing people to, three at a time, one at a time, and they're just piling us all in here. And I'm like, again, still nothing, no earthly clue. So I sort of start, you know, trying to mouth to the guys that I know in the other one, like they do have the window situated where you can't really, obviously you can't talk to each other. It's a little bit where you almost can't see each other. So, you know, we're trying to like mouth to each other, I get the quiet, like, what the fuck are you doing here type of thing. And I'm just shrugging. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. What's going on. And as I'm sitting there and they bring a couple more people in, a couple other people in, it starts sort of falling into place. Like what's happening. There was basically one gentleman who was conspicuous in his absence as far as, being in this company of people, and it sort of dawns on me what's going on. I want to call him a lot worse, but let's just call him from here on out the informant. Okay. The informant gentleman was not in our presence. What's weird about this whole story is that, at the time, I was really all about nightlife. I was, you know, there was a couple clubs in town. There was karaoke that I was all about. I was out probably between four and seven nights a week. Sometimes it was every night, whether it was drinking or just out trying to be, you know, seen, whatever. also, during a point of the social life where I was always out in some sort of dressy attire. Like a lot of times it was suit and tie, pocket square, the whole deal. A lot of, you know, other times it was like a, you know, jacket with a, you know, button up shirt, whatever. Trying to look nice, trying to polish this turd so I can get laid. I mean, let's be honest, that's what it was all about. And over the course of a few months back, especially, the informant was pretty well known to anybody that was in that nightlife that he was in some kind of trouble, and we didn't know exactly what was going on, but we did know that he was under some surveillance, under some pressure by authorities, and yet he was still allowed to, you know, be out and, you know, make his money. Like, I'm not going to say his capacity, but he was basically somebody that if you went out one night a week, you are going to be in the same room as this gentleman. I will say that I thought him and I were cool. I don't know exactly. When I think about him, I don't know what I would do if I got to see him again or talk to him again. I don't know if I would, you know, want to cause harm or if I'd want to have him as a guest on the podcast to tell, to, just so he could tell us what the fuck happened, you know? But yeah, he was basically under some pressure. He was under the gun. And what that had to do with was an arrest, of his being arrested, that if he wasn't cooperative was going to cause him, long-term harm, let's say. Again, I apologize for the vague nature. If anybody listens to this that knows any of the story and you're like, this is bullshit, I welcome the questions. This is my recollection of it, and whatever, you know, take it for whatever it is. What I was involved in, and when they were saying how the, you know, two people at a time, three people at a time were coming in, they were, the agencies were serving warrants that involved 30 plus people, that were basically pointed at as far as being involved in a drug conspiracy. And it's funny. Like if you Google me, it's about, luckily, you know, now because of the podcast and some actual positive things I've tried to do, it's a few pages back, but you can still find it. The arrest, there's a picture, there's a little photo collage that they put together for the front page of the Aspen Daily Times. It's all out there. And what basically happened was that this informant gentleman was looking at long-term harm, and he decided to throw a bunch of people to the wolves instead of, you know, taking responsibility for what happened. I'll say this, a little bit further down the line, I was approached by my lawyer to do likewise, and A, that's fucked up. I never would do that. B, I didn't have the ability to do that. I knew people that like to, you know, drink and party, and, you know, maybe they were, you know, doing some stuff, but like literally at the time, I really didn't even know anybody that was into recreational drug use or, you know, selling drugs that went beyond marijuana. So it was an impossibility for me to do that. But I still think, I mean, let's be honest. I would like to think that I would never do that because that's fucked up to be a rat. But in fairness, I want to say I would never do it, but I couldn't do it. So it didn't matter anyway. And you know what? My mindset at the time was I didn't do this. The justice system works. I don't need to. Even if I could rat somebody out, I don't need to. I didn't do it. Fuck that. Okay? So as the day goes on, again, let me reiterate that. The agency was serving a warrant to a drug conspiracy ring that my name got thrown into, and that's why I'm in this room now. Oh my God. The tweets are great. I love you guys. I also love the support that I got when I kind of mentioned this. I know the podcast has slowed down a lot, but this story is important to me. I do wish I could throw out every detail, but I don't think it's smart, so we won't be doing that. I'll get to the tweets here in a little bit. So again, as somebody conspicuous by the absence, the pieces start to come together, and now it's time for the phone call. And it's not like the movies where you get one phone call. They're like, you need to use the phone. Like you're probably going to want to bail out. You're probably going to want to call, you know, family member or your wife or, you know, whatever it is, you know? So first thing I do is, you know, luckily I have a great friend that runs a bail bonds company. And so she was my first call and kind of told her what was going on. And she was already well aware because I was probably, I don't know, somewhere between 6th and 10th person that she knew that was calling her for assistance that morning. And so she knew all about what was already happening. So what do you know anything? Like, what the fuck is going on? And she goes, all I know is that this is a huge warrant. There's a ton of people they're going after. It involves drugs. That's all I know. I don't know. And she was super surprised. She's like, I can't believe you're calling me this morning. And I go, I don't even know what's happening. Like, they're right now, they're searching my apartment. They're flipping my car over. Like, this whole thing is crazy. And she goes, okay, well, I'll tell you what, like, I'll help you out on the bond. And if you want, like, I can even call your folks. Cause like, that's the other thing. She knew my parents. And I think she knew that my dad was going to flip the fuck out. Now, here's the worst part of this whole thing. Some of you or, you know, other people in the world, like when they're kind of a shithead in life, it happens early. Maybe they start drinking when they're like 15 and they're like sneaking out and getting wasted and, you know, trying to sneak back drunk. Or like, I didn't do any of that stuff. Like, I was really straight laced. I was a good kid until I turned 21. 21 20 was the first time I ever got drunk, and I didn't really touch alcohol until I was of age. So I just wasn't in that world. And then this happened. I'd been 26 when this happened. I thought I was kind of, you know, protected by the whole, you know, if you know your surroundings, but you still choose to be in it, you'll be okay. We did know that this guy was, you know, kind of an issue, but, you know, we tried not to associate too closely because we didn't know what was going on. And, yeah, basically it was just this crazy thing that happened. And it was like, I'm 26, you know, my parents shouldn't be having to deal with my horseshit on any level by 26 is what I'm trying to say. So I take my friend up on the offer to reach out to my father before I did, which was a pussy move, I realize. But, you know, pretty soon after, I think I gave it like 5 minutes and then I called him myself. And of course he's on the phone frantic. Like, what the fuck is going on? I go, I really don't know. I would tell you, like, every time I was in trouble, like the second DUI, the first DUI, every time I was in trouble, I told you what was going on. This, I don't know what's happening. These guys showed up at the house. They came to my work first to get me, which would have caused an amazing scene. Thanks a lot, you dicks. I said, I have no idea what's happening. And I don't expect you to believe that because I've been kind of an asshole lately, but I don't know what's going on. So we figure out the whole terms of the bond. And let me just say this a little bit, okay? There was an African-American gentleman, there was a white gentleman, and there was me. Basically white, oriental looking, but in the end, a Mexican, okay? We all had the same three charges, and we all had radically different amounts as far as our bond goes. The white gentleman was set at, $15,000. The African-American gentleman was set at $125,000. I was set at $50,000. So I feel there's like a weird sliding scale of ethnicity there. Not really sure what the deal was, but with the help of like what little money I had in any of my accounts and my folks, I was able to bond out. I was basically in jail for, I don't know, 6 hours, something like that. Never left the holding cell. And in all that time, you know, we're trying to piece together, like, you know, a couple other people, like one other person that I knew came in. And, you know, it's starting to solidify, like, okay, this is all happening because of the informant gentleman, but why is it happening? Like, none of us are, you know, involved in whatever he's up to or whatever he's having to do. What is happening? So I want to go a little bit deeper into it. I'm not sure if this is going to be like a two-part or a three-part, but essentially, I do want to segue into things that maybe don't matter to the story, but they're just memories that I have as far as what happened. One thing I remember, which was, I mean, I guess if you're a cop or whatever, and this is how you go about things, I might not do differently than what they did, but I remember it's probably 3.5 hours in or whatever. A bunch of officers showed up with a cake, and some other officers came in, joined, and there was a lot of high fiving and patting on the back, and it was definitely like, hey gang, we did it, you know, type of thing. We took these guys down, blah, you know. The most bizarre part about this conspiracy is, as far as I know, they didn't get any real players out of this thing. I certainly wasn't one. There was a lot of people that had like records and history that kind of got put into it. There was a couple complete fuck ups. Like one gal, the girl they were looking for. There's another girl that had a similar name, same first name, same middle name, different last name, and they picked up the wrong gal. And it was all over the papers and stuff. And like that, those are the kind of little memories that gave me hope. And I still thought, you know, this is America. This is the justice system. This is cops. This is good guy versus bad guy. I'm not a bad guy. You know, I like to go out and party and, you know, try to scam chicks and all this. Like that, that's all it was. I could sit there and go, I am not a dealer, not a user. Let me qualify that. I have dabbled in some of that stuff before, the use. I've never sold. I've never, none of that stuff. It's all bullshit. I tell the story like if this was like a possession deal, you know, traffic stop, you know, something like this that happened maybe a couple of years prior, let's say, maybe doubtful, but maybe, I probably shouldn't say that, but I mean, I'm trying to be open about this whole deal. What it really turned into is your surroundings. Like, if you choose to be out and, you know, in places where shitty things happen, you know, you might get rolled up into some shitty situation. You know, fights. You know, there's girls that go to the bar that have a man, and they're out, you know, trying to fuck around, and you might get into an argument with somebody. Like anything. You know, bad shit happens when you put yourself in a bad situation. That's what I learned out of this whole thing for sure. So the last bit that I'll tell, we're about half hour in. Again, I'm in jail for, you know, roughly 6 hours, or whatever. I've got frantic parents, that I can't talk to, that I know like this is going to be a bad deal. Even though I'm 26, I'm feeling like a kid again. Like, my dad is going to be so mad. Like, this is so fucked up. But in my head, I have this whole, like, defense of, like, I didn't do this. I don't know what the fuck's going on. So I finally, after all the paperwork happens, I finally get bonded out. And, you know, they let me out. I go out the back of the jail. And my dad's waiting to pick me up because he knew I was being processed to be released. And, I mean, super pissed. More pissed than I've ever seen him. You know, my dad and I have been through a lot. He was really not a happy camper when I came out there. Didn't say anything. I jumped in the truck with him, and he goes, "We got to go to your apartment. You got to see what these guys did." And I'm like, "What do you mean what they did?" It didn't occur to me that they were gonna flip my whole fucking place. But that's exactly what happened. On the 5 minute ride, he's like, "What's going on? Like, who's doing this? Like, what did you do? Like, who are you involved with? Like, what's..." And I go, "Dad, I'm not a fucking drug dealer, you know?" And he's like, "Well, why are they searching your place? Like, why is all this happening?" I said, "I don't know, but I signed a search warrant." And he goes, "You did? Why?" And I'm like, "'Cause there's nothing to fucking find there." So him and I are like, you know, he's trying to figure it out, and we're sort of yelling at each other. And that was a fucking weird car ride, you know. But we finally do get back to the apartment, and this is what I thought was bizarre. I don't know if he did or if the police did, but somebody just left my car door like wide open. So I go to look in the car, and like my console, like everything is all overturned. you know, paperwork and just shit that you have in your glove boxes all over the place. Like they basically just rip and run. They don't, you know, politely flip through all your shit and then put it back the way it was. They pull things out. They throw it all over the place. It's crazy. And he goes, your car's fine. You got to wait till we get in here. So we get in my apartment and I mean, fucking flipped over. The bed is all flipped over and fucked up. My closets are all empty. Everything's on the floor. All the drawers were just pulled out and flipped over, put on the floor. And like I said, you know, the reason I signed the fucking warrant is because, sorry, I just realized how worked up I'm getting thinking about all this shit again. I had no, there was nothing in my apartment that I was afraid they were going to see. Nothing. You know, I'm sure they were looking for paraphernalia and, you know, whatever. The one thing they did find, this is a really bizarre thing, but I guess in the end it's good. Oh, whatever. I've watched a lot of Cops, okay? Especially since this whole thing went down. And one thing I know as far as a drug search and seizure is that if there's ever any weapons, they take that shit. They don't just like, you know, flip over and just like, oh, here's a gun and like leave it. You know, they confiscate everything that could be involved in what they're looking for. At the time I did have a pistol in the house, and for some reason they not only did they leave it, but they put a fucking security lock on it and they left it with the keys back in the closet. I always thought that was super bizarre that they did that. I'm going to guess that, you know, these cops are not bad guys, I'm sure. You know, like, this is definitely not an anti-cop, anti-task force rant at all. I mean, the war on drugs and, you know, keeping kids safe and all that kind of stuff, but that's real, you know, and I believe in that. But who the fuck finds a pistol and, you know, not only doesn't confiscate it, but fucking makes it safer and then leaves it there? Just thought that was super weird. But yeah, my entire apartment completely flipped, couch flipped. I mean, a complete disaster. And, you know, of course, my dad trying to figure out what's going on. He had the foresight to go and procure the affidavit, which I think I'm going to save for next time because I actually want to find it and read some of it. I'll probably just paraphrase it, but we'll leave it for next time because that's where this is just the morning of the arrest and how weird everything went down and how fucked up everything went down. The details of the next 10 months are ridiculous. And, you know, in the end, when we get through this whole story, I hope I can kind of just put it to bed. Hopefully this doesn't cause an issue. But like I said, it's a crazy story that I want people to know, you know, the major details of it, besides, you know, obviously names and all that kind of stuff. So, next time, the next one, we're about 40 minutes in. I want to do the tweets. But for next time, we'll definitely save the affidavit and we'll start getting into the whole process of, since I already had a lawyer for the DUI, how badly I fucked up by adding this to his case. The man's not a criminal lawyer. He's a DUI lawyer. And he, in my opinion, there's a little breach of ethics, a little fucked upness by even taking our money to represent us when he knew that he couldn't do it properly. So we'll get into all that kind of stuff next time. Ryan Reedman first, at Juster 12. Was the cavity search enjoyable or more medical? That made me laugh when I read it, but I'm going to tell you right now, I'm very happy that that never happened. Not even nakedness, which is good for everybody. Just change into these, and we'll get on with the rest of your day. So I do appreciate you hitting us up, Ryan. Chris, at CM Cepeda 27, did you have a cute cellmate? No, but I will say this. All the men, like everybody that they arrested, it wasn't all just males. There was a couple of girls involved in the whole thing, too. There's a couple smaller holding cells in the same booking area. And there, I don't know who she was, but there was a little cutie in the in the holding cell across from us, and little blondie, nice, I don't know, horizontal stripes did it for her. Whatever. Again, Chrisapita. Idiot. Was your shower time spent avoiding the soap drop? I wasn't there long enough to do shower time, so no, sir. I feel like you're trying to get sexual with this whole thing, and I don't really appreciate it. I did pee in said sink toilet combination in front of the other guys, but you know, what are you gonna do? I will say this too about the jail I was in. Excellent lunch service. I had grilled chicken sandwich, I had bacon, got a little soda. It wasn't bad, you know. Not that I wanted to stay there, but I feel like they, for whatever reason, kind of took care of people there. Sorry. I was telling all that story and not drinking, oddly enough. Ryan Reedman at Juster 12. Was the powdered sugar they deloused you with delicious, or did Super Troopers and Farva lie to me? Again, no showering, no delousing, no nudity. So, Stephanie Baez, I'm very happy to have you here. That's awesome. I don't know if you listen, but I'm glad you sent a tweet in. It's awesome. Yeah, boy. she says, granted one phone call. Who did you call? I kind of covered that. Went over, called the bondsman, and then called my dad. In that pussy order, because I didn't want to face it yet. It was pretty brutal. And one last tweet, Chrisapita says he hopes it was Ghostbusters, which is ridiculous. How would they help me in that situation? Hope you guys enjoyed this. Don't want to tease too much, but it's just super long, and if I get into the next part, it's going to be like another freaking hour, 45 minutes, and I'd rather split it up and you know, maybe keep you guys kind of on your toes. So gofromthere.podbean.com. Go to iTunes, search Go From There, one word, and follow me on Twitter at GFTpod. This is where you can get the podcast, and I do have some cool ones lined up. I finally have some free time to hit the podcast hard. July 12th is going to be the 3-year anniversary of Go From There, and I would like to, it might not coordinate exactly, but it would be kind of neat to have the 300th episode somewhere around that time. That puts me at 24 or 23 shows away, and I feel like I can hit that mark pretty easily. So I hope you guys stay tuned. I hope you guys enjoy this. If you have any questions or if you want to be part of it, hit me up, GFTpod. And I think that's all for now. Thank you, folks. See you next time. Open doors, so I'll walk inside. Close my eyes, find my face to hide. And I shake as I take it in.